CIN Files, the ultimate Bengals podcast with Nate Lundy.
Connor Howe from CincyJungle.com is our guest as we talk Bengals. You find Connor on Twitter at HowNFL. That's H-O-W-E-N-F-L. Connor, let's start here. The preseason is now in the rear view. The season gets started this week. What grade would you give Cincinnati for what you saw over the course of the preseason?
I think obviously the starters played super, super well, as they do pretty much every preseason. If I'm going starters, I'm going an A or B. Dalton looked good. Green looked good. Running backs looked good. Offensive line held up. Obviously, the reserves definitely left a lot of stuff to be desired. Haven't really established any depth as the team has had in past seasons. So I would say overall, I'd probably give it a B+, because at the top, if the Bengals are healthy, like, you know, the Broncos and the Panthers and the Bengals were last year, then they have the potential to be a Super Bowl caliber team. But if they get hit by injuries, it's hard to imagine this team is going to be able to compete long term.
Obviously, every team gets worried about that as well. But one of the places that every team that I've managed to talk to here over the course of the preseason points to when it comes to the concern with injuries or with depth is when it comes to the offensive line. When you look at the line for the Bengals, are there places that you get concerned even with the starters, or is it just a matter of the front five staying healthy?
Fans are definitely concerned with the center, Russell Bodine. I remember the Bengals trade up to take him, I believe it was 2 years ago in the 2014 draft. And he was one of those guys who had a great combine. He benched a ton. He has pretty short arms, and the Bengals were definitely impressed with his strength. Unfortunately, that hasn't exactly translated into the NFL yet. He still has looked, through his first two seasons, he only missed one snap. So he's pretty durable, which is nice, but he hasn't been a plus player. He's been an average to below average center. I think fans are being greedy, considering the fact that the Bengals had one of the best offensive lines in the league last year, but that's certainly something to keep an eye on, as well as at the right tackle position. They lost Andre Smith. And they have Cedric Ogbuehi, who was a first-rounder last year, and Jake Fisher, who was a second-rounder last year. One of those two figures, hopefully Ogbuehi, to step in and start on the right side. But both of those guys have been kind of dinged up to the preseason. So definitely health is going to be a concern at that position. And as far as the depth of the rest of the line, I think offensive line is one of the deepest positions on the team. They've got Eric Winston, who's everyone knows him as the head of the NFLPA. And he's been a pretty reliable backup offensive tackle, as well as the aforementioned Ogbuehi and Fisher. And then they also, on the interior, drafted Christian Westerman, who was he's out of Arizona State. He plays interior line. I think they took him in the fifth round this year, and he was, by many grades highly, is like about a third-round prospect. So they have pretty good depth on the offensive line. That's the one thing I'll say.
When you look at the tight end position, obviously, you know, Tyler Eifert there, but, you know, do you see them running a couple of two tight end sets? How do you see them utilizing the backup tight ends, or is this all about Eifert?
I think when it comes down to it, everything's all about Eifert. And the Bengals are, I think, that being said, they're definitely going to utilize some of their backups. Tyler Croft was a mid-round pick last year who the Bengals seemed really higher on him than they were on the kind of consensus top guy, Max Williams. Croft is a really good run blocker, and he played pretty well in Eifert's absence, even proving himself as a pretty legitimate passing option. So I think that the Bengals definitely, when they're healthy, will love to use the two tight end sets. They have Eifert, Croft, Ryan Hewitt, who's their H-back, who they just re-signed to a long-term deal. And then they have C.J. Uzuma, who is a fifth-round pick in last year's draft, who is a kind of raw guy out of Auburn who's been kind of proving himself a little bit more over the preseason. So obviously Eifert is going to be that guy at the tight end position. And really the position's production is just going to come from him. But I think the Bengals, and it's hard to tell just because of the new offensive coordinator, Ken Zampezi, but I think that they're going to try to implement their tight ends as well as they can, just because, you know, they have a solid run game, and the passing game could potentially, as many people have pointed out, maybe take a dip.
Overall, what's the latest on Brandon LaFell? I know he was dealing with the hand, managed to get a little bit of time, but I know that they're very much relying on him to help take some of the attention away from A.J. Green. So what's the latest on LaFell?
As of now, it seems as though LaFell is going to go into the season playing through, I believe, some sort of hand injury. It's obviously, it'd be nice to have, you know, a guy who was fully healthy heading into the season, but you got to look at it from a player's perspective, that LaFell is coming off of, you know, a poorer season in his career, took a team-friendly deal in the first place, and you got to imagine that the guy who's up there in age, who's coming off a bad year, he's going to want to play. And so as long as someone says, no, you don't have to absolutely have surgery, he's probably going to play. He played last week. He looked pretty decent. He got, he got held pretty bad in the end zone on what should have been a touchdown. He's looking good. I think the Bengals are comfortable with him. Although Marvin Jones was amazing last year, and that was a really nice luxury, throughout Andy Dalton's career, he hasn't really ever had that reliable of a number two receiver behind AJ Green, aside from last year and then in 2013 when Marvin Jones had his spurts. So, in the past they had Jerome Simpson, they had Andrew Hawkins, even at one point Brandon Tate, who just got cut. So I think although it's definitely concerning that LaFell isn't super healthy, I think the fact that, rookie Tyler Boyd looked good throughout the preseason and other guys are stepping up, I think it's not going to be as big of a deal as many people have made out to be.
When you look at the quarterback position, Connor, the there was some talk or some questions as to whether or not the Bengals would have interest in ultimately trying to trade AJ McCarron because of the fact that there were teams that were desperate at quarterback. That was not something that the team indicated that they wanted to be able to do. In your opinion, should they have at least entertained it for the opportunity to maybe help themselves out at other positions, or are they smart to stand pat with their backup?
Obviously, you'd like to see them throw something out for AJ McCarron. I'm sure they did. I think every team does its due diligence. But at the end of the day, I think the Bengals kind of understand that if they just let McCarron play out his current contract, he's going to net them a third or fourth round compensatory pick. And since the Bengals aren't the team that typically invests heavily into free agency, that pick is going to be like more and more likely. I'm pretty sure they're pretty much banking on that. So, yeah, Sam Bradford got that huge trade going for him with the first rounder, I believe a fourth rounder that could escalate. If the Bengals got a deal like that, I'm sure they would have taken it. I don't think they would have got – I think fans for the Bengals are overvaluing McCarron's his value. I think Bradford has put up a lot of NFL tape, and he hasn't been, the most amazing player, but teams still know what they're going to get with him. With McCarron, we've only seen a couple of games. It's really hard to understand whether or not that's just, a couple of games, it's an aberration in his career, or – whether he is actually as good as he's been on tape. So when it comes down to it, I think the Bengals, it'd be nice to see them put out some feelers, but you can't go wrong when you have a title contender that has one of the best backups, if not the best backup quarterback in the league.
Connor Howe with us from CincyJungle.com. Find him on Twitter at HowNFL, HOWENFL. Connor, on the defensive side of things, where's a position that has you a little bit nervous or maybe has you with some question marks going into the season?
I think by far the most underrated position has definitely been the safety position. We lost Reggie Nelson free agency. He's gone in Oakland now. And I think the Bengals, the Bengals were pretty clear that they had faith in, 2013, so fourth-year player, I believe, Sean Williams, a safety out of in Georgia. He started two games last year. I believe he got two picks. He looked really good last year, and Iloka, George Iloka, has the potential to be a top 10 safety. I think a lot of people are anticipating him to make that leap this year. But that being said, Williams, for as good as he's looked, he's also still been a pretty big liability in coverage. I saw Marvin Jones burn him in the Lions game on multiple occasions. And you're not going to be able to have cornerbacks playing aggressively if your safeties aren't able to cover that deep quadrant of the field. And given that the Bengals generally play two high safeties, it's Iloka's pretty known commodity. The Bengals know they're not going to give up the deep play to Iloka's side, but to Sean Williams, he's really going to need a step up. He's going to be a key player on that defensive in the secondary. Since Cincinnati runs a similar scheme to Carolina, and that they don't believe that the personnel in their secondary is as important as the players in their front seven. As long as the front seven can generate a pass rush and the safeties can just guard the deep end, the deep part of the field, that's going to give their corners enough time and the opportunity to be really aggressive in coverage. And so I think that the play of the corners in Cincinnati is going to be really contingent on the safeties. And so to have a first-year starter at safety position is pretty concerning.
Connor Howe, from the writer for CincyJungle.com, again on Twitter at HowNFL. Connor, really appreciate the time. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Done talking Bengals. Next, we talk with the coach, Brian Billick. Stick around.
around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
Well, I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am and I am, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott. It could be a huge plus for them. But that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at that Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team, but that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you've got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like a Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson is pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner. And so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. You're going to play great defense. Typically, you look at this and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball. And all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship-caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo if, as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bill team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength of the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan, or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do, more so than any team in the league. They morph from one week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times one week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you, and we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second win during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second win kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've played the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience. One team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five. Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.